Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 17. What if you were given 48 hours to live?
I was 22 years old, and I was working at a live music venue in San Francisco, one of the premier, awesome, most awesome venues in the city. Unfortunately, like many people can relate to working for a small business, I didn't have insurance. So when my stomach started to hurt and I started to have different ailments in my health, I Googled my symptoms and thought that I had an ulcer. I probably felt sick for about maybe 4 or 5 weeks. And I also noticed, I mean, looking back, I noticed things that now I know to look for, like just loss of interest in eating altogether, not able to digest my food, hair loss. All of that was starting to happen. And I was like, wow, this ulcer is like really kicking my ass right now. I didn't know those circumstances. And one day I woke up, was not able to go to the bathroom, and I had just had like extreme pain and started throwing up blood and actually just passed out unconscious. My neighbor heard me going through all this upheaval and throwing up and everything, and then actually heard me collapse and call 911. And the other saving grace is that I lived 4 blocks from a hospital. My stomach had collapsed on itself. The doctors found the tumors. They were all cancerous and poisonous at that point. So the last thing I really remembered was being sick, and then I woke up in the emergency room. I had had a surgery. Nearly half of my stomach removed and about a third of my intestines, and had quite the road ahead of me. Just how my life was going to be shaped from that point on, I had no idea what was in store for me at that point. When I came to, I have this giant, like 12-inch cut down the center of my core, my stomach. And, you know, I have all these giant bandages and I can't move and I've got all these wires and stuff. And I was just really trying to comprehend what had happened and what was happening to me. And I think I needed the same story repeated a long time or many times because I was just in shock. I was hospitalized for the next 3 months of my life. I have Peutz-Jeghers syndrome, which is a digestive disease or intestinal disease, and we are more susceptible to different types of stomach cancer, which is what I had. So basically, like tumors develop in the stomach, and it's just kind of this recurring thing. They're either benign or precancerous or malignant, either the three, and I've had all of them. I was really pretty healthy, really active, which is actually one of the things that got me through. It's not something that most people survive. If it is something that people have, it's usually when like the onset's later in life. I'm like 22, and what's the rest of my life going to be like? Am I even going to have that opportunity to answer that question? Things got a lot worse a couple times before they ever got better. I had pneumonia. I was right around 90 pounds. I had staph infection. I had bed sores from being bedridden. And I went from being this really independent woman, like fiercely independent and stubborn, to not even being able to like go to the bathroom by myself or anything. Like I was fed off of tubes for that time. I couldn't hold a book. I couldn't have a sip of water. A lot of the times even like hold the remote control to just flip through the TV in my hospital room. I had a PICC line, nothing in my mouth. I actually had tubes down my throat and being fed through a tube. Things that I dreamt about were actually food, and I have all my journals, these food journals that I had from these 3 months of not being able to eat, and they're things like a hot piece of toast with melted butter on it, like very specific. They almost was like porn. July 12th, my doctor came in to let me and my mom know that I would be very lucky if I made it through the weekend, and they were guessing maybe like 48 hours or so. My first reaction, I was really pissed. I was really, really pissed. By then, I did have a little mobility and strength in my arm. So I remember my mom handing me everything that she could in the room for me to throw it out into the hallway. I didn't hit anybody, but I just remember this, like, it was the first time in this ordeal that I felt, like, really just angry. And I'm so thankful that my mom gave me this outlet to just, she was like, yeah, like, be pissed. Hell yeah, you should be pissed right now, like, throw shit, whatever you need to do, like, this fucking sucks. In that process of doing so, I actually came to peace with, okay, like, this is maybe my last weekend, like, what do I do? So I started to write my will and, like, plan how I wanted my funeral. At such a young age to think, okay, I have to be at peace. I'm saying goodbye to the people that I love and my family and my friends. So I had my will and my funeral plans ready to go. I think it was probably that Sunday. I think word had gotten to my sister. I have one biological sister, and we have a pretty estranged relationship. And so I was on an EKG machine. I could feel like myself kind of like slipping out of my body a little bit. The phone rang, and it was my sister, who I don't have much of a relationship with and I hadn't spoken to in years. And I had the phone to my ear, and I was really weak, but I was like, hi. And realized it was her, and my heartbeat went up, and the doctors happened to come into the room at that time. They're like, well, who's on the phone? And then, you know, someone said, oh, it's her sister, she hasn't spoken to her in years. And they said, actually, you need to hang up because your heartbeat, that was too fast of a race, and I was in such fragile condition, I guess that was too much excitement for me. And that was, she had called to say goodbye. That was actually the last time we spoke. I felt like myself, like, kind of slipping out. And I don't know if that was like the start of the transition of like what it's like to actually like pass away, but I felt like I was looking at myself through a different set of eyes, like hovering above my body. And I also had this vision of what was going to happen right after I passed away with my mom, who was right next to me. And I remember having this thought, like, oh, this is it, like, it's happening. Mom touched, she grabbed my wrist and squeezed, and it was just this thing that she's always done with me. And it's kind of like, if you had to attach words to this touch of hers, it was like, I love you. And it like sprung a little life into me. That vision that I had where I was like floating above myself, I came back in and I was one. And I kind of was like, no, this isn't it. This isn't the moment for me. But that was also really exhausting. There was a little bit of time where I don't remember what happened right after that, but I know that I was exhausted from having that feeling. And so then, you know, Monday came, and then the Tuesday came, and then it was like a week had gone by. I'm still in the hospital at this point, but slowly, there was just these baby steps in my recovery. And clearly now, 10 years later, I'm sitting here able to tell this story, but at the time, it was like, how do we even plan around this? Because I had just been told that, you know, I had 48 hours to live, so, like, does my rent get paid for that month? Like, do I pay my cell phone bill? Like, I came back after 3 months of being in the hospital and had, like, eviction door, like, papers knocked, taped to my door in my apartment. And I had to get, like, convince my landlord that I wasn't being negligent. I actually was, like, busy fighting for my life. I had this major road of recovery ahead of me, but then all these, like, financial woes, because, like I said, I didn't actually have insurance. So that tab alone was $750,000. That in and of itself is, like, really, really daunting. But the fact that I needed to take each day on as like a new gift because I was told that I wasn't going to survive this thing, like, that was actually my priority at hand. Really tiny milestones, like today I get to have like pureed vegetables instead of being fed from a tube. So it's like these things, it was probably more than 4 months had gone by where I could even like shower by myself. I needed help up until then, and you know, I'm pretty fiercely independent and stubborn. So I'm like, oh, it was so much surrender involved, like every single day, like needing, having to be okay with asking for help. Because I have worked in the music industry, I have a huge community around me, and there were, you know, a lot of benefit concerts organized on my behalf, which I've put together benefits for other people. I never ever thought that I would be the recipient of one. And I actually was able to attend one. I went in my wheelchair, which was really humbling for me because I'm also really into dancing, and you know, I was kind of like in a lot of pain. I still had all my bandages on and like crying, you know, like, wow, I was honored to be there, but then felt like everyone's seeing me and this is real for other people now that were not part of the hospital experience. Given all the money raised at the benefits, barely scratched the surface of this giant hospital bill that I had. So it was kind of like $1,000 here, $2,000 there, $500 here to the creditors. You know, I'm like, I know I owe you like $750,000, but here's, you know, this. It's like, I just was doing it, but it felt like this is really silly. I had gotten called in for a meeting. They said, we want you to come in for a meeting with the board of the hospital and to discuss your financial obligations to the hospital. And I was like, well, I can tell you again, I don't have this money, but like, sure, I'll show up. So I'm like, go to this meeting. The director says there was an anonymous donor that paid off your debt to us. The whole amount was paid off by somebody anonymously. I just sat there and cried. I felt like I won the lottery that day. That was an incredible day. I called my mom right away. I was like in tears. I couldn't even get the story out. You know, the creditors and lawyers were calling me at that point. I think they waited just long enough to be like, okay, she's gonna survive this. I've never found out who this person was. I don't know if I'm also anonymous to this person, or this person knew me, but if this person's anonymous to me. It could be someone sitting next to me at a restaurant. Could be anybody I'm connected to or walking down the street and looking at. I have no idea. If that person or family was someday not anonymous to me, I don't even know that I could shape the words to speak to them. Still just as grateful now, 10 years later, than I was in that moment. After I had diagnosed the first time and gotten out of the hospital, I'd gone to Hawaii to really just kind of, that was like the first major thing I was going to do for myself. My time in Hawaii, I felt the incredible healing powers of the island. Came back feeling strong, feeling like a woman, feeling like I have an appetite and I can do normal things, and that was huge. That was really huge for me. Whereas before I felt like a very full, sexy, curvy woman, I come out of the hospital like, you know, about 92 pounds. Like I'm like the size of a little tiny middle schooler or something, like smaller even, and like how do I feel strong and how do I feel desirable? You know, plus I had like lost my hair, and then when it's growing back, it's really thin, and I've got this scar down my belly, and my curves are gone. And so Hawaii helped me heal in that way. Basically, there was another time that I got sick, I believe it was 2004. My spirit was a little tattered at that point, like, okay, I have to deal with this again. But I felt like, okay, well, I went through this already once before. I am not going to die in a hospital, like, which is what we all thought was going to happen in 2002. When it came around a second and third time, I was kind of like, you know, God, I'm not quite sure who you are, but what is the point of this the second and third time? I had an upcoming surgery and they were going to remove a small tumor from my lower intestines. If these are really like my last days, if these are really the cards I'm being dealt right now, I'm going to Hawaii. I'm going to get on a surfboard and I'm going to just paddle out. And I was just so adamant about not going out like in a hospital setting. Like I've done too much. I've gone too far. I do know what's going to make me happy is to not be at the chemo center, to not be in doctor's appointments, to not even be in the hospital at all. And so that's what I did. This is my destiny, so be it. Like, that's I'm willing to take that chance right now. I made it. I came back to the Bay Area for my surgery, and my tumor had almost completely shrunk and disappeared, and I was really healthy. At that point, I was like, okay, well, I'm onto something with this idea of self-care and doing what I love and being where I want to be and being who I want to be with. I do need the science of Western medicine. It's amazing. I think it can be like over-prescribed and abused. I also need to be able to fall asleep on a beach. I need to be able to meditate, to pray, to, you know, have herbal teas and, you know, have all these other alternatives. I need to be able to do both. I never would say that my illness is a gift, because I think a gift is something you want to give to somebody. But I'm grateful for how it shaped me. I'm grateful for the lessons in humility and love. Nor do I think that someone has to, you know, have a life-threatening illness and be told that they were going to have 48 hours to live to kind of have like certain insights in life. But I guess that's what I needed. Why am I here? It wasn't about like, why did this happen to me? Now it was about, oh, I survived this. Like, how do I make that count? How do I make my day count? I don't know that any of these things would be happening for me right now if I hadn't gone through these experiences. I'm not sure. ...2012 is my 10-year anniversary of surviving cancer. You know, 10 years later, I've been in and out of the hospital many times and many appointments. I've never been alone through any of it, which is really phenomenal, and I'm grateful for that. My biggest battle is like not feeling like damaged goods. You know, like in love, for example, I'd be like, well, who would want to be with me? I've got this big scar down my belly, and, you know, I don't know if I can have kids, and I've had this illness. We tell ourselves shitty stories sometimes, and then we actually believe our stories that we tell ourselves. But you know, I'm human, and that's what I deal with sometimes. And I don't have this like morbid approach or feeling around death. And unfortunately, I've been around it so much that, you know, I understand that that's just part of it. And I feel like in getting so close, it taught me how to live. Every day I think about the fact that I've survived this thing. It's something that I can't not think about. I've had this will and my funeral plans set to go. So there's still that side of me where I'm like, you know, I'm just so clear that nothing else is promised other than right now. I can hope for tomorrow. I'm hoping for next year. I'm hoping that I live a long and wonderful wild life, but I don't know. I don't know that for sure.